Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-hosts...
Alpha Shirt.
Dino Yoshi 13.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay, but I can't hear you.
Does that one work?
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had to switch something in Skype, that's all.
Here it was, thinking it was me all the time.
It's on my end. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 225. I am Dino Yoshi 13, and I am joined by regular co-host Dan Q.
Spring is in the air.
The Mean Team.
I'll show you tall and wide.
Mad Jin.
Spring, I just got 2 inches of snow.
And other guest host, Alpha Shard.
Hello, guys.
This show goes on long enough, he's going to have more total appearances than some of our old regulars.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
That's already true for one of our regular co-hosts, but yeah, he could surpass someone else. Yeah, that's true.
Have I surpassed Emran at least?
No.
No, that should take some time.
He was around for a while.
Emran was on for 50 episodes.
Yeah.
Scott.
I'm getting there.
You surpassed K-Mad Candy, who was on for 3, but the next person you have to beat is Cardam Andua. It's 25, so you have to get the 26 guest appearances.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you got a little while to go to get.
They hotfixed the Beyond Earth patch because no one bothered to find out whether or not the changes they made to the Wonders actually worked before they put out the patch.
Yeah.
And that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
Published on the 31st of March, and Dave Finkel posted patch details, the social media and community manager for Firaxis Games at 2K. Specifically, Quantum Computer and Promethea now function properly, so the Quantum Computer will give you free orbital unit maintenance and plus 50% orbital unit duration, and the Promethean will now remove unhealth for the city. I tried to find for all of these, by the way, what exactly was the malfunction, and with the Promethean, it was removing unhealth associated with improvements, you know, like the manufactories, petroleum wells, but not removing unhealth for population. This hotfix corrected that. Ectogenesis pod now give the correct food per population, which is to be 1 for 4 pop. And the new Terran myth now correctly applies culture to trade routes between different factions, which is, of course, plus 2 culture from trade routes. It's available for the PC, but I guess the Mac version is still to follow. Oh, jeez.
Either that or the people that, what's their place, Asper, may have actually saw the code and went, huh? This is wrong. Let's fix it.
Yeah, Aspire. Yeah, they might have very well said that.
Yeah.
My favorite response was from Enkidu at the 2K forums. Ah, crap, they didn't fix the buggy quests. Look, that was not on the list. This was a hot fix for an update. It's not a separate update. It is a supplement to an existing update.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a supplement that you take in the morning.
Yeah.
It's like a vitamin C boost.
It's for fixing stuff that they didn't bother to QA in the first place. Or make sure that it works if QA said it didn't work.
And if you want to hear more about this patch, how come you guys aren't going into the details? Well, we did that on episode 222. How come we're not talking more about the feedback from it initially? That was actually the last episode, 224.
Yada, 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 yada. I love how you named the last episode, but no one actually said anything.
What do you mean no one said anything? You're saying something right now.
No, I know, but I realized that you named it Hear the Jester afterwards, and I took a connotation to it. No one else did, apparently.
Have an email from one crazy Canadian. I almost said bad.
It was one crazy Canuckian.
Does anyone find the resources lacking compared to previous iterations of Civ? I do not mean the strategic resources, but resources that are just there, like copper or tubers.
For context, we're talking about Beyond Earth at this point.
Yes.
Yes.
We are talking about Beyond Earth, even though he doesn't say it.
Okay, cannot trade them. You can only build improvements. Some buildings give bonuses and some techs improve tile improvements as well, but there really is nothing to do with them. There is no incentive to go out and land grab for those resources because they do not have an empire-wide benefit like health or happiness or being able to trade them with AI. Any suggestions or thoughts on how to make the resources more integrated into gameplay?
First, I would disagree. I think the trade-off between luxury resources that you trade for money or trade for other luxury resources, and that's the only thing you talk to with the AI about, versus having resources that either boost an individual building or give some other type of improvement, and especially needing them local to those buildings. I think that actually makes the land grab more interesting, because you want to land grab towards certain types of basic resources so that you can get certain types of buildings in depending on what type of affinity you're going. So like on that front, it's actually an improvement over, say, Civ 5 and Civ 4, where you just spammed out and you got a bunch of stuff. You built everything in everywhere anyways.
When it's treated as local, for instance, oh, I've got copper, so now I can construct this particular building, that has an empire-wide benefit because it has a local benefit, because now that particular city is going to be able to make use of that resource, and then it benefits your entire empire, assuming, you know, you have more than one city.
It adds a little bit of specialization for the city. Like, if you drop a city down near a bunch of copper and maybe some silica, silica gives you more health. If you're going supremacy, a really, really good research place, because you're going to want your networks, and the silica gives space science anyways, and you're going to want to really push towards that being a research center rather than anything else, which can be nicer for the game.
Do you think they could make it better, though?
Oh, yeah,
because
it could be better.
There's still some potential, especially because the resources are, well, we're not in real history any longer, you know,
yeah.
At least not recorded history anyway, LOL. You can have a mess with tax, you can have a mess with where you want to go with stuff. There's a lot of things you could do with the resources that would incentivize them based on a certain strategy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, aside from just making them also strategic resources, because, you know, unit unlock is whatever. If you had special bonuses on each one or something, that would be really interesting as well.
The bit of the issue is not all of them have attachments to buildings.
Yeah.
So if more of them had attachments to buildings, that would probably be better as the base. But yeah, you could always do more with the basic resources other than the go grab it and trade it away just for giggles.
I do kind of miss the city-specific choices that were more emphasized in previous Civ iterations too, though.
For which?
Well, you mentioned Civ 4 and health and whatnot, and it made me remember about how you had to manage happiness and health at the individual city level, in addition to having an empire-wide stopper on expansion as well. And I feel like there is some potential for resources to go back to that role, even if you don't call it health and if you don't make it the same for every city.
Yeah.
I do find that the lack of trading is definitely a con. It's a loss, you know, because I remember in previous Civ, at least Civ 4, you could trade a lot more. You had all these different resources, luxuries and strategic to trade, and they would use copper for, like, Colossus, and I think you used ivory for Statue of Zeus, so it would be good to get that stuff back.
I think Civ 4 went a little overboard in the sense of, oh, look at all these resources that I have, and it's kind of like, okay, if I want to build mounted units, I need a source of horse. Okay, I have that, and that supports my entire empire. So now what am I going to do with the rest of these as the game goes on? Mm-hmm. Civ 5 put in quantified resources. Okay, strategic resources, and I know in the question one crazy Canadian says, I do not mean strategic resources, but in other resources that are out there. And I think a lot of the negative reaction to what Beyond Earth did is the fact that there are no luxury resources in Beyond Earth, and the fact that you can't trade with them with the AI is kind of one of those, I think, extended criticisms.
Diplomacy system.
Because it's like, I don't even have something to trade with the AI, so why would I have anything to do with
the diplomacy system needs to be burned.
Yeah, and pretty much the only thing you did in Civ 5
was trade resources.
Exactly.
Research agreements, back when they were as hell, were also spammed.
Well, yeah.
So good. You can have a resource impact the city in a certain way that doesn't impact any of the other cities, but has like a heavy effect on the city that's settled the resource. And since it's an alien resource, you could do a lot of things with that.
Yeah, well, that's like the supremacy building requires silica being local, and then it gives a health boost to silica locally.
Yeah, the buildings
and
are
therefore
start
you,
there, for sure.
And therefore you have to have it local to work the tile, and any tiles that are worked tend to be local.
And one other thing I think about here is that when we're talking about giving the resources individual attributes too, like how in Civ 5 Marvel gets the 50% boost to wonder production.
You mean, so give them, like, if you have X things, then something else works better?
Yeah, so, like, if some of them don't have specific buildings to go with them, maybe we give them other bonuses to want to go get them.
Well, I mean, they're all kind of in there. Like, networks work with copper. You don't have to have it to build a network, but you have copper, then you get a boost.
copper networks in that day and age? Man.
Yeah, in the future.
Yeah.
I think on his list, Fruit and Tubers, the two that he called out, don't get a benefit from a building. They just have high base yield. Now, you need resources for the Wonders and Beyond Earth, but mostly that's how much geothermal you're going to throw away on a crappy wonder. But what if, as a crazy tangent, to build certain wonders, you need local resources? So if you want to build X wonder, you need, say, a couple fruit or a tuber or some combination thereof to get that one that gives you extra food per population.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, we had that kind of idea a little bit even in Civilization V with a few wonders like Neuschwanstein.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't have a mountain within
X range.
Yeah,
X range, and now to extend it to resources. So
yeah.
That makes sense, and that integrates more into gameplay, like One Crazy Canadian wants.
Yeah, maybe that works a little bit better. Now, granted, the wonders have to be good, but
yes.
And even if you don't have those resources, then you could really want to go and do terraforming. Although the current set of terraforming requires that the tiles have never been improved ever, which is really annoying. But I think if you take it into the slightly larger context, of the three affinities, none of them want or hate resources, like alien resources, at all.
Oh, that's a great point. That could definitely add a lot more flavor to the affinities.
Yeah, like you would think Purity, because Purity gets those super boosted farms and a couple other boosted things, that you would think that they would want to remove these basic resources and replace them. Except for, you know, maybe some of the not so crazy stuff, like copper is copper. But some of those alien things like the tubers and the fruit, maybe your Purity people don't like fruit and tubers. So you would actually want to get rid of those. Whereas if you're a Harmonious one, you would probably want to go get that terraforming satellite that drops basic resources and not have farms or generators.
Even just having different yields based on your affinity direction would be great.
Yeah.
Although I guess because you can go multiple affinities inefficiently, it's probably better to just tie it to level versus yield, but still.
Yeah, it depends on how to balance it so that you can't just get everything for everyone. Of course, with Supremacy, they're just weird about it. I think Supremacy should be massing out the strategics and production. Supremacy would require you to start converting production over to food for that to really kick in and go like mass manufactory sort of plan. So manufacturers, arrays, academies, big generators, things like that.
How fun would it be if you could balance the game in a way where it worked with energy partially or eventually completely replacing food as a resource for supremacy if you went really far down it? That'd be pretty lulzy.
It would be local-based as long as it didn't completely take away. Because that would be the wrong problem, because then supremacy affinity people would either be like mass generator or would be constantly broke.
That's true. Yeah.
But there is always way more energy in the game than there is food, unless you're a Purity mass spam farm. But then again, I hate the fact, and this is the tech tree problem, there's a lot of issues in the tech tree where things just pop up in weird locations, like the plus science from farms is on the Harmony end tech, right above the Harmony end unit. So it's like, you have to go far away from Purity to get Purity farms? There's some weirdness in there that could probably be rearranged on the tech tree so that Purity does want massive farms, and they want big, and they want to convert the planet to look more like Earth, so wipe out those stupid resources. Terraform.
You know what they're going for with that. They want to incentivize you to somewhat deviate from your tech path situationally. The problem is there's not enough incentive to do it, but I understand the concept of why you would put the Purity farms out there. It's just not enough of an incentive to actually do it. Then you just basically don't get that bonus in a normal game.
It's in a completely wrong tech spot.
There's so many options that with less resources to trade and do things with that it would be really incumbent to explore this again and rebuild it so that way we can use it for diplomacy, for buildings, for better tile improvements and more activity with the environment that the civs are in. And then, so.
Ooh, adjacency bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that too. Why not?
Good, yeah.
Adjacency bonuses. So if you have tubers and fruit, you put a farm down there, the farm gets an extra boost, because it could be a fruit farm.
Now all we need to do is make resources a little more time-sensitive, where after a certain point in the game, like when you reach a particular technology, its benefit goes away. So then you want to stop. No, I'm kidding about that. That would be going a little too far, maybe for a scenario.
Having forests actually being useful in-game.
strategic resources, luxury resources, all of these kinds of resources can be found on tiles. Speaking of tiles.
Are you tiling?
Ah!
That's hard work. I don't want to.
Are we messing with your bathroom now? I'm not helping you with that, man.
Get down on your knees.
You.
It's time for the grout.
Oh, boy.
That's quite all right. I wouldn't want you to touch my bathroom.
Hey-o.
The latest in a string of strategy articles from Mega Bears Fan, a past guest on Polycast, most recently episode 223. Now looking at Murica. All your tile are belong to us. A look at the updated civilizations in Civilization V, Brave New World. Yes, I know America was in Civilization V Vanilla when it was released almost 5 years ago. Man, we're old.
You're old.
But specifically going through what changed in the November 2013 Brave New World patch, where the big thing was that purchasing tile discount doubled from 25 to 50%, and all land military units have plus one sight. This is part of the unique ability of Manifest Destiny. And, of course, we will also get to the two, that's right, two unique units, the Minuteman and the B-17 Bomber. Quote, America is a rather unfocused civilization in Civ 5, and this can make them rather difficult for some players to play. Its uniques have mostly military applications, and, much like Assyria, they work best if played aggressively. But America is still flexible enough to pursue any victory. Although America tends to peak late in the game, there are also subtle nuances of America's abilities and uniques that give them great situational powers throughout the entire game, unquote. And I think we have agreed in the past on this show that the discount of purchasing tiles, while beneficial, maybe even more now with the doubling, is a bit more situational than all land, and that's all, yes, land military units, having plus one sight.
Yeah, I don't think we actually agreed on that, but that's fine. I've always been a proponent of the benefit of the discount when purchasing tiles. Always. It is a very powerful thing if you have cash.
Yeah.
Because you buy all the cheap tiles, the culture counter for your next tile does not increase. Therefore, you start getting those really expensive tiles for cheap culture.
Mm-hmm.
Strategize. Yes, it's completely different.
It's going to transfer into a worthy investment, but it's more likely to if you have that kind of discount.
Well, otherwise your city borders aren't going to grow very far. And you can easily max out your three-level ring border, and then all your cheap culture is just going to push the fourth and the fifth. And
that's true.
That pushes people even further away.
That's true.
Especially if you slap down a city right next to something like Saradapazi, and it's a couple tiles away, and some idiot AI also drops the city down next to it, and you have to bust over there and buy it.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. It's very useful, but it's not something you want to just be spamming, because if you're just buying, like, a grassland tile a little earlier, there's probably a better use of your money.
Yes.
Well, if that grassland tile leads to a marble or to a...
You know what I mean. Yes. Yes. Okay. If you need to buy it to get something that's worth buying, then yes, you buy it.
Yes.
Whereas all military land units having plus one sight, that's advantageous, full stop.
Yeah. I actually really like that for catapult and cannons.
Artillery.
Well, no, because at that point you can shoot further than you can see. But for catapult trebuchets...
Well, but the artillery gets extra sight then at that point.
Yeah, it still does, but you can shoot further than you can see at that point. So if you can't see it, the plus one sight doesn't really matter. But for catapults and trebuchets and cannons that can shoot two but only see one, with this you can see two, so you don't need meat shield up front looking for you. You can just shoot things. So if your meat shields die, you can still blow things up.
As long as there isn't a carpet of doom around it, in which case, hey, I'm going to use my siege weapon to spot stuff.
You probably don't want your siege weapons up front against an opposing carpet. That's true.
Yeah.
That's the only caveat. But once the carpet of doom is cleared, well, then, yeah, rock on.
Mm-hmm. Of course, no naval or air units or whatever. Remember, it's military land. But that starting warrior running around with that extra sight, I've used that to great advantage. Like, pop up on a hill and see a city-state four hexes away, which got me the first-to-visit bonus versus some scout of somebody who was closer but couldn't see it quite yet.
True. Allows you to, especially in the earlier game, spot barbarians and minimize at least a little bit more the likelihood that they're going to spawn.
Or gank.
Yeah, and if you do see them, then you can go kill them. And on top of that, because you have greater visibility, you can have them spawn somewhere else, which could be closer to somebody else, which also helps you. And also to go with that, although you cannot take more than one sentry promotion with scouts, you can get up to 5 visibility if you get scouting 1 and scouting 2.
Yes.
That's amazing.
But mounted units are the ones who naturally get the sentry promotion, which means your horses are not hyper-visible sensitive. Basically, if you have mounted units, don't use sentry.
To now talk about the other uniques before more general strategy, including how to defend against Marika. I just wanted another excuse to say that, of course. The Minutemen replaces the Musketmen. This unit may move through rough terrain as though it were flat, receives a plus 15% bonus when fighting in that terrain. And like the Brazilian unique unit, although that comes later, you now earn points towards a golden age when it defeats an enemy, and that was part of the November 2013 update, and we have not talked about America in detail or part of a greater segment since that time, and that is pretty impressive, especially when you can bank that promotion when you upgrade it. So you can have not only infantry, or minute infantry, as Mega Bear Fan refers to them, because you might say, well, now just a minute, I can get that with Brazil. What's so impressive about that? Yeah, but they're not going to have that rough terrain movement on top of it, plus any other promotions that you were able to get from these infantry when they were, in fact, Minutemen through combat.
And if you get Mount Kilimanjaro,
well,
really fast. Wow.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Minutemen were strong enough as is. They didn't really need to get the Brazilian unique bonus, because now that makes the Brazilian Brakanaz completely and utterly useless, comparatively. Or at least not unique anymore. They are no longer unique.
No, imagine. America must be made more powerful. It has to be a top-tier civilization.
What? Oh, then they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, exactly. This is just one step among many. And on top of that, they have to make up for all the lost time where it was terrible, which includes Civ 4, by the way, where it was among the worst picks in terms of unique.
America in Civ Rev was god tier. B-17 bomber, flying fortress.
It has 5 more range strength than a bomber, so it's up to 70 from 65. It has a chance of evading interception. Yep, damage reduced by 50%. That's nice. And also does additional damage to cities compared to a bomber, so it already starts with Siege 1, which is plus 33%, which I would hope is what you were probably planning on doing with your bombers a lot of the time anyway, along with perhaps also clearing out some Carpet of Doom.
Well, the fact that they have extra 5 range strength over on top of a normal bomber, that helps with the Carpet of Doom.
Exactly. It is one of only 2 unique air units in the game, of course, the other being the Japanese Zero. Yes, unlike the Japanese Zero, okay, this does require oil. However, you're not probably going to need, or should not need, as many of B-17s as you would bombers otherwise, because that's what this replaces. And so then that gives you more oil resources to sink into fighters, tanks, or battleships.
You mean more bombers? More bombers!
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the map, how you want to distribute your oil. But if that means that you don't need any tanks or battleships, then okay, yeah, and you can have more bombers, or at the very least you don't have to worry about having as many sources of oil and still being as effective as you would otherwise be with, you know, your regular bomber.
America, B-17, spam, go, go, go. Insta upgrade into logistics or air repair. Actually, I think you can start with air repair if you have appropriate buildings.
Yep.
But then you can get to logistics, and then you upgrade those into stealth bombers, because even though you get stealth bombers, you can still build your B-17s because they're bombers. So you just, like, mass spam upgrade, blast everything out of the sky. The only thing to stop you is a nuke.
You can even make that more advantageous to upgrade if you get yourself down the honor social policy, and then you can get yourself some discount. Start banking that gold, and say you get more golden age because of Minutemen, get the golden age points, and then you start making more money, and you can able to buy more B-17 bombers in addition to constructing them, or instead otherwise, and then it just kind of mounts and mounts and mounts and mounts.
Dan, you're being silly. If you get honor, everyone knows it's the first thing you fill out.
Always.
Without exception.
Yes, as Mega Bears fan also writes, even if you want to go for a victory path other than domination, okay, it does happen, you can still use America's powerful military benefits. Just engage in small-scale wars against weaker civs and or a city-state or two. And I just say that you can also do that even if you're going for a domination. Use your powerful artillery, oh, synergy, and B-17s to soften up enemy defenders and then finish them off with your Minutemen infantry in order to earn those Golden Age points. Yeah, that's the thing. Minutemen have to get the kill in order to register that win. But then again, that's the same with the Brazilian unique unit. As long as you avoid capturing cities, of course, you shouldn't suffer too much warmonger hate from other AIs, but even if you do, if you're America and you're sweeping across the map, they can just whine and complain all they want, and it really doesn't do anything to you, practically speaking.
Oh, you can win the other victory conditions by leaving one AI left with its capital, and then you can win any victory condition. That's true.
Yes.
You can go for other victory conditions than domination. It just requires you to not conquer the last capital.
And I think an exception in this article as compared to the other strategy articles is how few wonders are mentioned with regards to the civilization. But
well, it's kind of sad to say the same thing over and over again. There are wonders that you pretty much always want.
Although, in this case, if you get Angar, you get a 75% total reduction in further tile gold cost, because that adds another 25%. And, of course, Chichen Itza, with a boosting the length of your golden ages, will come in handy later on when you start producing Minutemen.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So 25% cost on buying those tiles.
Whee! The buying the tile thing, I find, really comes in handy, regardless of your civilization, when you get industrialization and you reveal coal on the map. Because how often is it, oh, hey, that's just outside the border here. I could go ahead and buy that. Or, I guess even to another extent, if it happens to be like in a fourth ring or whatever, and then you've already got that culture pushed out because, hey, you bought those other tiles, then you're more likely to be able to scoop that up from somebody else. Or be able to say, hey, I need to go settle that spot, and I'll just buy, and it's not going to be as much of a drain on the treasury as it would be otherwise. I mean, heck, it's still a good idea to go ahead and do that. You could go ahead and say, but wouldn't it be more fun, Dan, to just ask the AI for their coal and then deny them the use of that? Well, hey, you could go ahead and do that, too.
All part of the strategy.
Nope.
And also, since at that point you still have an AI that likes you as well because you haven't declared war on everybody.
Well, there's that. Or you could be a little more strategic and decide, okay, who do you like, who don't you like, who's close to me, let's beat up on them together. Hey, give me your coal and deny you the use of that. Oh, thank you.
Oh, what? A human-controlled AI can be a troll. Beware of trollish behavior for an American player, as they might use their tile discount to buy tiles. Yeah, that's just horrible gameplay. I've seen the AI do that, so...
Yes.
Not just humans. But yes, they might. Don't send a settler through a gap in America's borders. Why? Because they didn't want you there anyways. You shouldn't be trying to sneak settlers past another player through their territory.
Because players are...
Yeah, there'll be a lot of ishing, or just open-ended, no more ish.
Declare war!
Thanks for the free worker.
Yeah,
unless you're using that as a distraction, although I think there are other units that are that you can use as a distraction.
Settler, here you
go. Look at my settler!
You will spend one attack on one turn to deal with this. It's all part of my plan. So it's losing all my cities to you.
But yeah, the problem with America is that they don't have a specific bonus to one of the victory conditions. Yeah, they have the bombers and all that, but I mean, the bombers just make them over the top at the end of the game. Normal bombers will pretty much give you the exact same effect. They just start faster. The Minutemen are a pain because of the ignoring terrain costs and the drill, so it means that in that early Renaissance period, if they come to attack, they'll hurt. And if they hang out in rough terrain constantly, that'll take even longer to get rid of. But they don't have a super science bonus, they don't have a culture bonus, they don't have a lot of other bonuses. They aren't bad. I would not put them at the bottom of the list.
Overall, I would say they're mid-tier, maybe like upper mid-tier, but they're mid-tier.
Eh, I wouldn't say upper.
They are extra average.
They're decent if you know how to play that style. If you play the usual style of just science, or whatever your style is, and you don't try and play them slightly differently, they'll be worse. But if you try and play them to their specific bonuses, then they'll be okay.
I give them upper mid-tier because you were talking about the Renaissance there. At that point, there still is probably land to grab.
Like yours.
Capitalize on the Minutemen, and you start pushing closer and closer to your opponents. And then in that particular era, even if they too are at Renaissance, then yeah, okay, it depends on what your terrain like, et cetera, et cetera. But you could really capitalize on that. And then defending America, which is phrased as impeaching Washington. powers of America are a lot more abstract than many other civilizations, which means that the AI isn't particularly good at using them. So defeating the Washington AI isn't very difficult.
Well, just don't get ran over if they are spamming Minutemen. That's when they're really dangerous.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, hey, Zulu, I'm going to go, oh, Impy, okay, I'm going.
I'll be over there.
I'm going to go the other way till I get to the next era. I'll be back.
Is there a mountain range in between us? Yeah, okay, let's plug the mountain range. Done.
episode 222 with Dan Q, Makalua, Dominion Team, Mad Jin, and Lord Tyrion.
So, Sith Epic 2013, and Thor's like, "Dear Firaxis, fix ideologies, they are broken." That's literally the title. "Ideologies are broken in this game. I'm playing as Shaka on my way to getting a domination victory. I have the highest scores and been able to stay happy while maintaining a large empire. From the looks of it, you would think I was about to win a domination victory, but then ideologies come into play and I'm pretty much forced to rage quit. No matter which ideology I choose, I get negative 25 unhappiness. Ideologies are broken, fix them please." Well, I think there's still a good amount you could do for the 25 unhappy. And if he's getting that unhappy, is he neglecting his culture so that everyone else's ideology culture is pushing on him?
Yeah, it was one of those situations where he was going a domination victory, and then in subsequent posting of screenshots, he went the freedom ideology initially, and someone said, "Okay, so you're doing all of this conquering, but you went freedom, and then, for example, you're not getting all the happiness from barracks, for example, that you may want to construct barracks now, if not for the combat, then for the happy, because as you take more cities." But the thing is, since he was in freedom, he didn't have any of that infrastructure. So, like you're saying, Mac, which ideology is most influential with you? Are you managing things like borders and trade routes to cut unwanted influence? If you keep up your tourism and culture, that minus 25 should slowly improve. I think rage quit is premature, and this is from Keymast. Okay, maybe right away it's not going to be corrected, but now that you know that this is ideology that you have forced into, then either you stay in it and you start working within the bonuses that you can get in that ideology in order to improve happiness. And I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if he was so unhappy that he got switched into this ideology that he was probably finding it difficult to manage, for example, trades, luxury trades, for example, with other civilizations. And now that trade relations have improved, you might actually be able to get that and improve the happy combined with your local infrastructure. So I don't think it's rage quit, but I do think he's put himself in a situation where he wasn't managing as well what was going on around him in terms of what other ideologies people chose and what their influence actually is.
He may have picked that because he wanted the free social policies, you know, if he was the first one to adopt it, but that's not going to help you if you got this kind of a situation.
Yes, I mean, if he's got a large nation, then just sheer pumping culture out shouldn't be that hard, because when it comes to culture versus tourism, volume matters. And if you have a huge nation, then you should have a huge culture output. Yeah, you're going to get ideologies and social policy slower because you have a huge nation, but you should be able to just mass pump culture and therefore defend yourself. It's kind of like blatantly ignoring one aspect of the game and then wondering why you're losing.
That makes sense, also because ideology kind of pops up to you in late game. That's pretty much on purpose, but I can see how you can be surprised by it if you haven't played up to late game a lot.
That's true, but that could be it, yeah? Maybe up to this point you were able to ignore it, but now you can't because your hand has been forced. So in other words, all of that time that you were raffle stomping on the way to a domination victory, there was this clock that was running out on lookout for ideologies coming into effect. Number one, other civilizations adopting their own ideologies. And if he was on his way to a domination victory, even though it's not clear, I wouldn't be surprised if he was the first to adopt the ideology. And if you're pissing off AIs, you know, they might not really be that inclined to follow your ideology combined with what their own goals are in terms of victory. So it's kind of a corrective measure in a way, which was you had all of this time. You had time on your side, and now you don't.
And if somebody was more culturally dominant, you should have gone after them first. You know, France is sitting over there culturing out everything. Maybe you should have taken on France.
Yeah, choose your targets strategically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If somebody is culturing you or tourism you, just declare war and burn down all their lands, and then they won't be producing a lot of tourism.
Nope.
And if you attack them, if they have it in a city that you take, and then you have their tourism stuff, and they don't.
And as this is a single-player game, you can also use this as a learning moment, and hopefully maybe you've got some save games, and you can go back and replay some of those to see, what if I made this decision at this point in time, and then I get to that point, my ideology is forced, am I still as bad off? Do I still have 25 unhappiness? Do I still have some considerable unhappiness? Is it less, or is it more? And then you can improve your play.
Their option is just drive up your happiness to the point where getting reductions in it doesn't really matter. You're still happy.
Theater. We don't often have this particular segment because it gets embedded in other discussions, but from our 2014 feedback survey, actually more than 50% of the respondents said that they wanted us to actually talk about specific gameplay experiences, so we're going to do just that.
Oh, boy. I think we all know what I'm going to talk about here, or at least you guys, because from a recent Turncast we did, and the AI, I think, stole, what, 6 wonders from me? In, like, 2 different games, when I had 1 turn left on all 6 of the wonders. And yes, I am aware that the AI is not coded to do that. However, it is very aggravating when it happens 6 times in the same day.
This is an opportunity for some cross-promotion of Turncast, which is our cooperative and cooperative-ish podcast where you can listen to segments from various games that we play, typically on Saturday evenings, past and present panelists on the show where it's all going up against the AI. We record the audio, and you get to hear about some of the things that happen in some of these games. And your experience there, Nick, we were going to compare this to alcohol, which is an unusual premise for me to make because I don't drink alcohol. But it's kind of like a beer, because a lot of people drink beer, so a lot of people are going to be able to relate to AI taking your wonders. I think my example is a much more expensive high-end liqueur or wine or something that has to age over an extended period of time and is very expensive, so not as many people have access to it.
Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome. And that is being in a war with an AI. The first part you can relate to, I'm going to declare war on this person. Oh, look at that. That person just declared war on me. Oh, well, now I have righteousness on my side now, clearly. It's okay. I know where the front is. I've got my troops there. But it's kind of mid to late game, so I already have established cities and don't have to worry about barbarians as much. Things are kind of spawn busted there. That's fine. Map's kind of filled out. And a city-state joins the war, the AI. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Not thinking about the fact that that city-state is kind of close to the interior of my empire where I have no units. And I notice they start pillaging some things, and I'm thinking, okay, fine, I've seen that. I'll construct a unit or two. And while I'm so focused on the front as the turns roll over, I don't see the combination of siege as well as melee units heading towards my second most populous and most productive city. Then the city-state turns around and takes that city, and then, this part was a first, they raised it to the ground, which was a very humbling experience, not something I hope to ever repeat. I did reconstruct the city, but one of those situations where the city-state did more damage to me than the AI proper, kind of like it took more effort to capture that city-state in turn than the civ proper because their defense was better, and of course, because another civilization on the map had reached a particular technology that much farther down, they had those comparable units, so it took longer to get rid of the Carpet of Doom because of that. It took longer to bombard the city down and to take it, and you will be able to hear that as well as what happened to poor Dino in an upcoming Turncast episode later this year with some more bleep profanity. Just profanity, period.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll share one that's not exactly recent, but it did happen this year at least. Got my first Skill Dorado, and I played a lot of single player, and I've never gotten Skill Dorado at all. So when this happened, it was pretty cool that it was during our Turncast game. I stopped it, and I was like, hey, Dan, guess what I found? And you're like, oh, Skill Dorado. And I wasn't really sure what to build at the time, and you told me, oh, try building a settler, and so I did that, and I got my second city right away, and I think I claimed the El Dorado place, and I claimed another holy site, which got me a religion, and one of the other players was playing Ethiopia, and I actually beat him to religion, even though he was in Ethiopia, because I went for holy sites that makes all the natural wonders, give you +4 faith.
Oh, yeah, One with Nature, I think it's called.
Yeah, One with Nature, yeah. I won that one, so it was a pretty cool one. And it was just nice, just nice, just for once, to have Skill Dorado, and pretty much handed me the game, I think, because it was so advantageous and really snowballed getting that second city up right away, and then my third city. And we play on small maps, so, you know, 2 or 3 cities, that's pretty good for starting. And then I had, like, 2 natural wonders. I forgot what the other one was. I think it was Mount Sinai or something like that.
Yes, Scott was correct that he beat me to El Dorado. And as frustrating as it is in a single-player game when the AI beats you by a turn, when someone beats you by a few seconds, to El Dorado, Oh. And, and, oh, by the way, Scott, I add that to the list. First, you took Lake Victoria.
No.
From me in that one game.
Lake Victoria was on purpose.
Yes.
There is no control over El Dorado.
Look, I am not distinguishing between purpose and not purposeful. It just happens, Scott. It's an absolute record. And you can also hear that on an upcoming Turncast episode.
I don't know. When playing with multiple players, it's always good for the players to tell you who they are, because I spent a chunk of the first, that one game, with Steve next to me as Assyria, and I built up an army to go after Assyria, and he didn't tell me that it was him. So I got over there and went, wait a minute.
Okay, two things. Number one, yeah, we're talking to Steve. That's warning you too, past guest on the show. Number two, you know, when you open the diplomacy screen,
yeah, that's when I realized
it looks a little different when it's a human player as compared to an AI.
And that's when I realized it was a human player. I'm like, what is this? This makes no sense. Silly human player. My path of expansion.
Civilization Online is coming in 2016. On the 11th of February, Guru Focus published an article that talks about in 2016 they are expected to launch Civilization Online. They note that it will be first launched, quote-unquote, in Korea, where the developer XL Games is located. Civilization Online is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. And the following day, 24/7 Wall Street's Lee Jackson also reported this timeline. But I liked the last one, which added something new. These other two articles confirm that it starts in Korea. It doesn't mean it will only be Korea, but that's where it's going to start. They're not going to commit to other markets, but they're not going to say it's just going to be that market. I think that's fair because this is an experiment. You could say, well, this is just the next version of Civilization World. It's not like Civilization World. The CEO for Take-Two was interviewed for MCV UK.
Oh, not this guy again.
He was asked, you've invested a lot in the Asian game sector. Why invest here? What are your goals?
There are a lot of people, derp.
I want to make money.
I was about to say, what are your goals? Yeah, to make money. Part of his answer confirms what has been previously reported. Quote, we'll be launching Civilization Online in Korea during the coming fiscal year and possibly in other areas in the Far East and elsewhere, unquote. Moreover, though, quote, for massive multiplayer titles, the U.S. is a very unfriendly market.
Wow.
But Asia is pretty open, and we go where the consumer is, unquote.
To be fair, it's not unfriendly as long as your name is Blizzard.
Yay.
Jeez, guy.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure there's some massive multiplayer titles out there from Blizzard that seem to be doing well in the U.S.
Maybe that's what he means when he says unfriendly.
Yeah. They don't like our massively multiplayer titles.
This market is not friendly because there is a crushing competitor in it. Well, that's fair in some way. I mean, you wouldn't want to say it that way, but...
But to be even more fair, Korea already has a lot of Blizzard.
Yeah, that's true. Although they're not as well known for the MMO side of the Blizzard influence.
True. Less well. But anyways, the reality is, yeah, South Korea, being a smaller country, it has better internet connections because they don't have to go very far to connect things, which means more people are online with high power bandwidth, which means that you can get more games going there that are totally online. Plus, they like online games. So, there's that.
Recorded for episode 219 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, and Mad Jin.
Key terms used to find Polycast. I must say there are some really weird ways that people have searched for a specific term and came across the Polycast website that just had me saying, why?
Google.
Some of them made sense when I stopped and thought about it, and the other ones just no. One was Gary Hudson Revelation,
Wow. Which
I'm pretty certain has to do with the One More Turn podcast at onemoreturn.net, which is show. Recruiting actors for Machinima, which I'm pretty sure has to do with Age of Nations at ageofnations.net, which is really unusual seeing as how that hasn't been in production for now almost 8 years. www.dramaticsspaceproductions.com apparently was a search term that got people to the Polycast website.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Top 10 most famous prophets in the world in 204.
Okay.
Got someone to the Polycast website.
So we're profitable then?
How is that sum spelled? Was that with the PH or the F?
PH.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean I can't switch it.
I know. Another unusual term, and I'm this is a top 10, by the way. tab_hty.top got someone to the Polycast website.
Hotty top.
195.BALNAS/MB also got someone to the Polycast website.
Are you sure?
Yeah, apparently. It's what the stats tell me anyway. Three times in November and once in December, someone found Polycast by searching for /Ericsson AB/local OMT, blah, 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 OMT.exe.
Sure. Somebody's linking to you.
Yeah. There are no EXE files available for download from the Polycast website, OMT or otherwise. My favorite results, though, were what I put at number 3, number 2, and number 1. Three times someone found Polycast by searching for null.
N-U-L-L, null, that's
it. N-U-L-L, null. Someone found out for runtime, 09M59S, which of course is the length of Turncast episodes, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And the best search term for finding Polycast in 2014, 4 results, someone typed anything. Polycast is anything.
There you go.
Recorded for episode 220, with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Canis Albinus.
BE topic. Plum Fairy wants to know about staggered starts. Do civs that start later get some sort of compensatory bonus? If they don't, it seems like using staggered starts would give human players a rather large advantage. Your answer is, they do get a bonus! And actually, turning off staggered starts actually tends to make the AI easier to beat up, because they don't get their bonuses. And there's even an XML file that tells you about it, apparently.
Yep, the energy boost, culture, science, army.
Mm-hmm.
And it scales depending upon the number of turns late, because we know that can be up to even 50 turns to the game starts that you could have an AI land. So The later, the greater advantage they get, but they're really going to need it because it is an advantage, but they're also behind.
Yeah.
And also ignoring the fact that they're AI, so they're probably not as good as a human player to begin with. Setting aside that.
Well, if they were as good as a human player, then it would be more advantageous to turn zero land. But it, being an AI, just getting some bonuses could overcome that.
Yeah.
It doesn't play that well, so the advantage of it being around earlier is less.
The reality is, the guy who landed on turn 15, you're already like 4 affinities up. Hi, thanks for landing. Death. Mom, mom, mom.
Your bonus is last into the game, first out.
Yep.
Yay.
That's a good bonus.
Recorded for episode 222 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, and Lord Tyrion.
So, over on Reddit, somebody has translated all of the languages from the different civs and put it into a handy little video.
Mm-hmm.
So now you know what they're all saying.
Yeah, because what they say on the screen in their language is not necessarily in whole or in part the text that is on the screen. Some people questioning the exact translation, and of course that always comes up.
Yeah.
In any particular thing, but you get the general gist. Not that I can speak to firsthand that I know all of these languages that have been translated, and or I researched it well enough to assume that it is correct. But when I see some of the translations and then I see the text that's going on, as well as the body language and the tone of the voice, the eye contact, that they've animated all of those things, it fits well.
Mm.
These are pretty old videos, actually. They were published in October 2013. So it runs just over an hour, and there's also 2 separate other videos for similar translations of speech for during peace treaty and trade request negotiations. And then last but not least, perhaps fitting in a way that Scott is here to introduce this one.
I scrolled through this earlier, that was like the first one that like, oh yeah, we need to discuss this. City States Be Stealing My Natural Wonders. Okay, so grammar. This is by Terry Frank Kratos. It goes to Imgur, where he's showing his natural wonders being stolen by city states. This is Bergen Crater. Oh, and then there's Serdipati. Yeah, you know what the thing about this actually that I've started to notice is that you actually do have a considerable amount of time to get a settler and just rush over there and buy a tile. Like, if you were America, the tile would be a lot cheaper. There have been games where I've seen a city-state never claim the natural wonder that's next to its border. And also, on larger maps, this usually doesn't happen as much. But with on smaller ones, I know it's unintended, but an unintended side effect of code to keep natural wonders from being in your borders, that it ends up being in a city-state's borders. Because I think the map is made, and then your cities are placed, and then the city-states, I think they're like the last thing to be placed on the map, so then
yes,
they tend to take those natural wonders, but it's not an intended to be that way.
Actually, it is a lot more intended.
well, it doesn't happen on
you're not allowed to start next to a natural wonder.
Right, I understand your that is path. Intended.
So that but. Side of things, the game goes through, uses some mathy math that is not really always great, but it picks locations that are really good for everybody to start on, and then it flips through and goes, city-states also need decent locations. And then once all the good locations are taken up, city-states don't necessarily have the restriction of not being next to a natural wonder. And
give them the natural wonder is what I mean.
I don't know, because every single game for a very, very long time, almost 5 years, city state for
small maps, hugging. But not huge ones. This is
even on huge ones, there's a lot of them hugging up.
Not really. It's usually like on a huge map, I've actually found all seven wonders not claimed by city states at all.
And, yeah, you know, it's more likely. Map,
more consistent.
At least on standard size, I see it. So.
Yeah, standard, yeah. It's huge.
And I would also see a difference on maps that are more water-based as opposed to those that are land-based.
Yeah, there's that too. More water means less.
Yeah, I think the thing, I'm seeing that these images that he posted, the city-state hasn't quite claimed it yet. So if you get a settler over there, you can...
Yeah, well, it takes a while to get the monument going. And since natural wonders are higher cost tiles, they don't initially grab them. They'll grab other stuff first.
Yeah, it is frustrating, though. I mean, you could just turn off city states. That itself a problem.
Turn off natural wonders and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's true.
Somewhere in between keeping it as it is and what you were suggesting, Scott, was in response by a JoeMama91. This is why I usually decrease the default total of CS by 3 or 4. City states 3 or 4 frees up a little more space and you can actually settle a few natural wonders. And SSJ Hero says, I don't see a problem. I see 2 free cities.
Yeah.
But
that's pretty much what it is.
That's what I do too.
I will say, though, that I like to distinguish between stealing and taking. In this game, besides the dictionary supporting me, the city-states take the natural wonders because they tend to spawn near them, and then they're generally in a better position to be able to have their border expand to pick it up, perhaps, before I can get a settler in position and then get it. Stealing is when you take your great general and citadel, and now the natural wonder is yours or theirs, as the case may be. But besides that, yeah, I go with the SSJ Hero there. It's, well, I would like to settle for that, and I would like that to be mine. Oh, the city-state took that? Well, then I'll just take the city-state, and then it'll be mine along with the city-state.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward.
Call-ins today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Now, granted, if you go the north route along the health line, eventually that tech is right next to it, but you're more likely to steal it from a harming person than you are actually to want to go research it yourself.
That's not necessarily bad, though, because you're getting a benefit from something you normally wouldn't go, so it makes it a choice, an interesting choice, if it's well-tuned.
Yeah, but the only choice...
whether or not you pursue that technology,
Yeah. No, I think it's too far out for that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could definitely make a case that it's not well-tuned, and I would agree with you. I'm just saying, like, conceptually, there's nothing wrong with that. Even if in practice, it's not working the way it probably should be.
Oh, no, I'm fine with that, because the tech trees for purity and supremacy overlap. Like, if you ignore all else and you just go, what do I need to win? The purity and the supremacy tech trees overlap in a massive way, except for maybe, like, one or two techs at the end, being the end techs. Meanwhile, Harmony is off to itself on the side. And no one cares about terraforming, because there's nothing down there that actually helps you towards winning, even though supremacy gets all the affinity points for terraforming, which is just odd.
Yeah, that is odd. It sounds like it'd be more purity, if ultimately, from a thematic standpoint.
Thematically, the strategic resource one, the one that adds production, that would make sense.
That makes sense. Supremacy.
Yeah, but the one that adds food and the fruit and copper and tuber, I would personally suggest would be more harmony based.
Yeah.
As a concept.
But that's not really terraforming.
Well, you're using the orbital unit to add more the alien stuff.
Yeah, I guess.
But then again, I think that as a concept, each of supremacy, purity, and harmony should have their own style of improvements. Maybe you get them at 8, so that really, really hard to pick up for everybody. And then they can go crazier where you have, like, more pure harmony type improvements around your cities if you went harmony. So you'd get things that would work better with miasma.
I like that.
I know. I think we've talked about that before. But the whole concept of the improvements in Beyonder, some of it's in there, and you can sort of see where they might have wanted to go, but it just didn't make it.
I think that takes us to the end of the show.
All right.
All right. Thank get out of here.
Thank you for joining us for Polycast episode 225. I'm the Mean Team, and I was joined by regular co-hosts and goat hosts, apparently, Dan Q.
Gobbling up all the land.
LOL. Madjin.
Bah.
Semi-co-host, Alpha Shard. Semi-regular co-host, Alpha Shard.
That's better. He's not really a co-host. He's a semi-co-host. He's a pseudo-co-host.
Well, semi-regular. Semi-regular.
The regular was an important qualification.
Semi-regular.
You like a co-host, but you're not really there yet. You know, that's what having you on so often in the hope that you'll improve and become an actual co-host.
I had a completely different connotation to semi-regular. So, you know.
I don't want to think along those lines.
You have more fiber.
Speaking of that, Scott, you had your thunder stolen and maybe other things, too.
What are you talking about?
There
thunder.
And finally, guest co-host Dino Yoshi.
He got stole by Segway.
Oh, no.
I didn't say that. Other people said that.
Oh, no, we definitely won't quote you on that at all.
Nope. The second death knell for terraforming, because it's just so freaking expensive research-wise to even bother with terraforming that you can't do it in a normal game. Right, your dog agrees.
Doggy agrees, terraforming. When he says on console and not crap, and he's referring to the DS, and the DS is also a console, just to try a little bit there. But I know what you're saying.
Yes. Is a handheld device, not a console.
I'll show you a handheld device.
Yeah.
And you should do a better job of that than the AI. As with any Civ, of course.
Yeah, but as any Civ, you can do that with, I guess, the AI. Just build lancers. That took Dino a little bit.
And then you get the notification. And yes, this is also Civilization 5. Yeah. Recent Civilization gameplay experience, Civ 5 or Beyond Earth. Recent is relative.
Relative? I remember back in my day when I used to play Civ 5. I don't know.
Look, why don't you just tell us about one of your experiences where your worker would die to miasma in Beyond Earth? Okay. That's fine. That's recent. Go for it.
That hasn't happened for a while.
Recent is relative.
Imagine this is your topic.
What? I have topics?
Yeah, we do.
I have topics. Which one is this? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, right.
score date April 4th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.